You know, every time I speak, I want the truth to come out. You know what I'm saying? Every time I speak, I want to shiver. You know, I don't want them to be like, they know what I'm going to say because it's polite. They know what I'm going to say. And even if I get in trouble, you know what I'm saying? That ain't that what we're supposed to do? I'm not saying I'm going to rule the world or I'm going to change the world, but I guarantee that I will spark the brain that will change the world.
We got to have personal responsibility. Political accountability and corporate culpability.
Get up, 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 get up.
We must eliminate poverty. I don't care what color the person, a child.
Get up, get up, get up, get up, get up, get up.
Why does a pessimist see a glass half empty, but an optimist see a glass half full? Are we locked into regressive mentality by chains unseen? If you try to fail and then succeed, which have you done? Do you ask enough questions or do you settle for what you know? The only questions that really matter are the ones you ask yourself. Welcome to Mental Dialogue. All I ask is that you think.
I am your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates, along with special guest co-host Ashley Thomas, and welcome to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. We are the return of intelligent radio as we ensure the free flow of opinions and push the envelope on the questions America's afraid to ask in the mainstream media. Good morning, Ashley. So glad to have you back in the saddle with me. You just enjoyed an amazing trip of the carnival for what I understand, but if you will, Queen, say hello to the intellectual outcast out there listening, and welcome you back to the show, Queen. How are you doing this morning?
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm good, man. Toronto is amazing. Everybody's so nice there. I didn't even know what to do with myself, but I'm excited to be here this morning. Thank you so much for having me. You already know I'm very excited about this discussion topic, so good morning, y'all.
Oh, glad to have you. We have a special guest on the line with us as well, Dr. Anthony Grady. So we'll get him introduced to our intellectual outcast out there listening. Thank you, King, for being with us. You've been on one of our community checkup, which is our mental health Zoom. So this is your first time being on the show with us, and we're glad to have you. But if you will, say hello to Ashley. Hello to the intellectual outcast listening. Again, there's a lot of background noise. I don't know where you're at, brother, but it's real. It's coming through real clear on the show.
Man, I'm sorry, man. I was at an event with my daughter, so I'm just out here, man, hanging with the kids and just trying to do something positive for this back to school. So I apologize, but I'm excited.
We good. We're gonna make it work. But glad to have you on. But if you will, can you give a little bit of your background before we even get into this morning's discussion question? Well, thank you for being with us.
Yeah, you know, mental health, practiced social work for over 20 years, jumped into mental health probably about 15 years ago. I own my own practice, man, big advocate about education, really trying to educate young people and families. I do a lot of domestic relationships. I'm the coordinator for Indiana Lake County Domestic Relations, just the big advocate, trying to figure out how we can battle some of the impoverties or misnomers that plague the black community, but just society overall when we talk about mental health and just stability.
No, glad to have you. For I understand you are a, in a sense, trauma specialist, so glad to have you on. Again, our co-host is Ashley, so if you will, Ashley, say hello to Dr. Grady, and we'll let the cat out the bag on this morning's discussion question.
Yeah, good morning, Dr. Grady. Nice to meet you. I'm sure the conversation is going to be amazing.
It's a pleasure. Thank you so much.
All right, Ashley, before we tell them the actual discussion question, you need to add a little more of your background and why you were so excited about this morning's discussion. So put your background out there first, and then we'll expose the discussion question. Again, I go by the name Black Socrates. If you are a first-time listener, we delve into all of our subject matter via the form of a question. Our concept is to take the Socratic method. If we ask the right questions, maybe we get to the right answer one day. So with that said, Queen, give them your background as well.
Yeah, so I want to say, like, back in 2013, like, I became a pure romance consultant. So I sell adult toys and novelty products. And it's not just the toys, right? It's having these very intimate and personal conversations with men and women about their sex lives, products that might work, and things in life, you know, that impact your performance and ways that you can open up and have a better expression of self and sex and sexuality by incorporating toys or just having better conversations. So, yeah.
Thank you for that background, because, again, you were glad to be a part of this conversation. I'm glad to have you. As I always tell people, we are the best in the world at necessary conversations on race, sex, culture, and business in the African-American community. And so let's get into this subject matter that can be very scary. We talk about it all the time. I will give out the phone lines, hoping people will be or won't be afraid to share their stories. I'm going to embarrassingly share my own story for this morning's discussion question. First time having sex, memorable or do-over? First time having sex, memorable or do-over? So I hope some of you out there listening are not afraid to kind of share some of your stories. Again, I'll be sharing some of mine after this first break. But we're going to start the way we always start. Ashley and Will, Dr. Grady, I'll be asking you this as well. But I'll let, in a sense, Ashley, my co-host, show you how to do this. So the way we always love to start is just basically, when you heard the question worded that way, what was your first initial thought, Ashley? What was your first thought, Queen?
I will say my first thought was like, they not ready for this conversation. That was my first thought.
I could dig it. All right, Dr. Grady, same thing for you. You don't go into the second and third thought. This is just when I called you and say, hey, which is, you know, you were amped to say, yeah, I'm brother, I'm willing to support you. So I thank you and appreciate, you know, as you're out there handling and taking care of your family, we appreciate you. You made time to come on, so I do appreciate that. But with that said, when I said, hey, here's the discussion question, I didn't ask you this yesterday when I asked you to come on, but when you thought about the question, do you recall your first initial thought?
Yeah, man, how was it for me? I thought when I first started, and I actually honestly thought about the experience that I had, and it kind of took me back to really appreciate my adult version of that question today. So, I mean, yeah, it made me think about, man, really? Oh, wow. It was actually, because you don't think about it no more. You kind of like, okay, it happened, you move forward. But it made me really think about it and actually made me really process, you know, my position in that situation today. So, yeah, it was actually a good question for me to think about, too. It's been a minute.
No, absolutely. I realize, you know, I've been doing this show actually for 7 years for anybody out there listening. And as I was preparing for the show, I realized I thought of something I've never thought about, thinking about this very question, right? So it's like, kind of like what you said, you really never think back to your first time. Like, you just never think, you obviously remember when you started. Everybody can say, oh, I started at this age or I started at this age. But when you really process that first time, there's a lot to unpack. Some people have, you know, great experiences, funny experiences, and sometimes, you know, some unfortunate experiences. So what we hope to do for everybody out there, as much as we, you know, want you to call in and share your stories if you're willing to, part of this conversation is, the, you know, a fun side of it. But as Ashley said, they're not ready for this. There's aspects that I think is worth, you know, dealing with and talking about when it comes to this discussion. You know, like even I thought as I was getting ready for this show, even thinking about where I was for my first time, right? We're gonna go to a break here, and when we come back from the break, I'm gonna open with the story of my first time again. Very embarrassing, but even the concept of where I was, literally. Just the thought that I literally, as a country boy in a small town, my first time was just kind of in a little place on the ground in the back in the woods behind somebody's house. Just even the idea of that, because, you know, as an adult, you're not being, typically, hopefully, you're not just being careless of where you would lay down or whatever. But when you think of something that's so important to us, I could imagine people's first times could have been anywhere and under a lot of different circumstances. So with that said, let's go to this first break. When we come back, I'm actually going to come out of the break, actually just give you a heads up, I'm going to share a story about my first time with both of you, and that'll kick off this morning's discussion, and hope, and I'll give out the phone number after that and get other people's in as well. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. All I ask is that you think. This morning's discussion question, first time having sex, memorable or do-over? We'll be right back. All I ask is that you think. Have you heard about that podcast, Mental Dialogue? It's so good it should be illegal. But if you miss the live show every Saturday, 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Blog Talk Radio, be sure to catch replays on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Podbean, and all other streaming platforms. We are the return of intelligent radio, and we are the best in the world at having hard conversations on race, sex, gender, and business in the African-American community. And remember, all I ask is that you think.
Hey, Smith, where you find that Prince Sign of the Times on vinyl at? Real talk, you got a dope vinyl collection. What, you been collecting them, like, over the years or something?
No, actually, I just started my collection. But my man Tobago over at DBS Sounds, he be hooking me up. You remember DBS Sounds?
On the South Side? They still around? I figured most of the record stores in Atlanta be closed by now.
Hey, vinyl is the new wave, and DBS Sounds got the best collection in town. You can still go there and flip through vinyl. They still got CDs and mixtapes, too. Let me check their IG page at DBS Sounds ATL. They still be having artists in stores and everything. Hey, you want to run by there?
Hey, man, I ain't got time right now. I got to go back to Cali tomorrow, but I might have to catch them next time I'm in.
Oh, nah, you good. Even when you get home, you can just shop at their online store at dbssounds.com. They'll ship directly to you anywhere in the country. Matter of fact, jump on dbssounds.com on your phone and order straight from there.
Word? Hey, I'm about to get my music game up. Hey, what's their address in case I get a chance to swing by there? I'm going to pick up that new Kendrick Lamar CD.
Oh, they at 6604 Highway 85, Riverdale, Georgia.
Bet.
What do you know about sex?
I know a little bit.
Oh, yeah? What little bit is that?
I know. I take a girl, stick my thing in it, and 9 months later, a baby comes out.
You think that's it?
Basically, yeah.
Well, remember this. Any fool with a dick can make a baby, but only a real man can raise his children.
Welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates, along with special guest co-host Ashley Thomas. This morning's discussion question, first time having sex, memorable or do-over? Our special guest is Dr. Anthony Grady. Thank you both for being with us as we hear a quick little cut, funny cut from one of my favorite movies of all time, Boys in the Hood. But with that said, I'm going to go ahead and get this story about my actual first time out the way, get my embarrassment out the way so we can not laugh and focus on me for the rest of this show. But if y'all will, bear with me as I read something that I actually wrote about my first time years ago, and it just so happened I'm bringing it up on this show. I absolutely love women. When I was in the fourth grade, I used to brag about how I lost my virginity when I was 4 years old. Some of the girls in my class believed me. Thing was, it wasn't exactly a lie. At least until I turned 11 years old, and my best friend, who was 3 years older than me, and older than myself, convinced this 14-year-old girl to let me off in her stuff. We went into the woods behind her house earlier playing. We went in the woods behind her house, and I jumped on top of her. I started humping away just like I did when I lost my virginity 7 years earlier playing mommy and daddy behind my grandma's house. That's when the 14-year-old girl cried to my best friend, who was watching right there beside us, he doesn't have it in. Me not understanding kept humping away because it felt good to me. My best friend stopped me and told me I needed to put it in. That's when I made what at the time would be the biggest mistake of my 11-year-old life and said, I don't know how to do it. The girl asked my best friend, who she really wanted to be with in the first place, to show me what to do. She showed me, and I jumped back on got it in a couple of times, still not understanding where or how it really was supposed to go. Obviously, that day, I discovered I had lied to my classmates. I had been a virgin for those 7 years of my life and hadn't even known it. Now, back to the catastrophic 11-year-old mistake of mine. The little escapade took place during the summer of 85, right before the fifth grade in my first year attending the middle school. This was also the first year I would have to ride the yellow bus to school. Either my mom took me or I walked with my classmates. But that year, I had to take the bus for the first time, and I was very nervous, especially since there were high school students who rode the same bus with us. My first day of middle school, I went to the bus stop in my new school clothes to get on the bus. When the bus finally arrived, I waited for the driver to open the door, and I nervously walked up the stairs. When I got to the top of the stairs, a few of the eighth graders started chanting as they dragged their words out. "I don't know how to do it." And he promised he wouldn't tell anyone. I was very upset with my best friend for letting the cat out the bag, and I had to withstand these chants for almost an entire school year before they died down. My fifth grade classmates from the neighborhood were the worst and made the most fun of my obvious lack of knowledge of the opposite sex. They boasted about knowing how to do it and bragged about their first time with a girl. When I got older, I realized their boast gave them someone to pick at and hide the fact that they too were virgins. Nevertheless, these chants were so traumatic in my young life that I wouldn't ask a girl for a dance at one of the school's famed sock hop dances my entire fifth grade year, not realizing very few boys ever got up enough courage to ask girls for a dance in their fifth grade year. I would have been afraid if it wasn't for the entire school knowing I didn't know anything about girls. I guess the other fifth grade boys had their own fears or just wasn't as interested at 11 and 12 years of age as I was in the opposite sex. So we spent our fifth grade year at sock hops either chasing each other around or watching and admire the seventh and eighth grade girls who seemingly had no problem with not only asking girls for a dance, but also asking for slow drags as well. It wasn't until my sixth grade year that I would garner enough courage to ask a young lady to dance. The first two said yes, building up my courage to approach what to me was the brightest star in the sky. It was near the end of the dance, and I knew I had to ask before the sock hop was over. I had dared ask. Finally, I was forced into action when the DJ announced the last song in a long-time standing tradition at all school dances. It was a slow song. I walked up to her and popped the question, "You want to dance?" She didn't say no, but she didn't say yes either, because my classmate asked her to dance at the exact same time. So then when she decided between me and my classmate, who also happened to be my best friend at the time, since the previous one now was in high school and couldn't have a sixth grader as a best friend, she chose him. But what did I expect? She obviously remembered I was the one who didn't know how to do it. Ashley, I'll start with you, Queen.
Yeah, it's just fortunate. Like, to me, that is like, I'm sorry that you had that experience. I'm sorry that happened to you. But I think that's like more common. And as our babies get younger and like information is there, like I feel like these things are going to continue to happen because there's so much oversaturation and exposure that happens with all of this information out there.
Absolutely. Dr. Grady, is a therapist and someone who does this type of work. How does that my first time story come off to you? Again, my whole fifth grade year, I wouldn't even ask a girl to dance. People would just run up to me and go, "I don't know how to do it." Like, I was in my whole fifth grade year going through that. Because my eighth grade boy told me I didn't know how to do it, man.
Man, you know, I mean, when I hear that story, man, it's not so uncommon. I think that what you get is you're not the only one that goes through that, because I think a lot of, as I say, they perpetrate that they're actively involved, but everybody wants to be in that group. But I think the thing is that your boys think it's kind of funny because, you know, when you're growing up, your boys kind of rib you and drive you. But at the end of the day, the traumatic experience that you had that you realize now as an adult was kind of like going through the motions as most kids do now today. And so as we talk about that, man, I think it's cool. I think that it's kind of funny because it does happen. Because I think we all go through that, even with my own boys, when I think about that story. But at the end of the day, I think that whatever you learn from that to hopefully better increase your approach to this subject as you get older. So, I mean, it's just not uncommon. I think it's something that you hear about a lot of times through a bunch of different people in the different avenues, no matter where you are.
Yeah, the part that makes me smile is how I literally thought, I used to literally, until I found out I didn't know how to do it, I literally thought me hunching on a girl as a four-year-old maybe not.
Yeah, yeah. But that was cool for us, though. Think about it. When we was growing up, humping was safe. Like, it was safe. It was fun. It was a natural thing. But today, the difference, only difference with it is that humping to us was we had to sneak and get the magazines to see what people was doing. Today, the exposure is greatly different to the point where they see more graphic things. We didn't know. You know, if you catch a mom and dad doing it, you're like, oh, my God, I'm about to die. Because that's the only exposure you probably would have caught walking in on them. Other than that, today's exposure is totally different. So the conversation is different. Your conversation is innocent because that was what you really did. We catch you, we hump on, we fell on you. Now these kids are actually involved because of not only the peer pressure, but what they see. So, yeah, it's different. Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Yeah, that's definitely my experience, you know, catching, walking in, you know what I mean, and then immolating.
Yep.
Definitely.
Yep.
Definitely what had me hunching. And not that I kept doing I didn't do a bunch of hunching, but I literally would brag to my friends that I didn't have sex before.
That's right. Yes, sir.
Hey, even I can remember in the fourth grade specifically, so at four I hadn't even started school, right, but I can remember specifically in the fourth grade, I can still remember bragging about it, and everybody thought I was the man, because now, of course, again, at the time, I don't know about actually putting it in, right, because so I'm saying I've done it already, and I was the man even as a fourth grader, because I hunched on the girl, but again, I wasn't calling it hunching because I thought hunching was actually having sex. So, you know, just to highlight that. But either way, either one of y'all, anyone want to jump into any of your personal stories about your first time? Again, did you know what the hell you was doing? Because clearly I didn't, and I had an observer, if you will, right? And to be able to tell the whole story about how I didn't know what the hell I was doing.
So, I mean, I'll share my first story. It's a little traumatizing, and I don't know that I've ever talked about it as an adult on, like, such a large platform, but my experience for me, like, growing up, my mom is a reverend, so, you know, I grew up in the church. I was a preacher's kid. Yes. And I know in another conversation we had on this show, I just talked about how, like, you know, growing up in the church, like, things are different. There's different expectations on you. So I actually did not lose my virginity until I was in college, but I had never had any conversations about sex, how it works. I don't even think in my school, like, we had sex ed. So my first experience, I met a guy at school. He took me over to his place. We started having sex. And like we were making out and then we attempted to have sex. Like, thankfully I had the wherewithal to be like, no, we need to use a condom. We wound up using a condom. And then unfortunately, like a week later, I contracted an STD. And so that was my first experience. And it was really like demoralizing because the guy told me that I didn't feel like a virgin. And I'm like, well, I've never had sex. I don't even know what this means. And it was just kind of like over before I even knew what was happening. And it was like so traumatizing for me because a lot of this comes back to that church, that religion, where it can sometimes do harm.
Ooh.
Because for me,
oh my God.
Once it was all over, I was like bawling my eyes out and I was like, oh my God, who's going to want me now? Like, I'm not a virgin. I've contracted an STD. Like, oh my gosh, how is this even happening to me? And like, I called and called one of my good guy friends at the time, and I was like, hey, you know, like, this is what happened. And I was like, you know, if you had a choice between choosing someone who was sexually active versus a virgin, like, would you choose the virgin or would you choose the person that was sexually active? And he's like, I would choose the virgin. And like, that just further for me solidified his feeling about, oh my gosh, like, there's nothing I can do about this. And so like, from there, it really like changed my mindset and really put me on the mission to better understand sex, to better understand like our responsibilities and making sure that we understand the gravity of the situation and like, are you prepared for this step? Do you know what it means? And so I have been an extreme advocate of making sure that people understand their rights. And like, we might get into this later in the conversation, but you know, there's a part of me that feels like for women, up until a certain point, sex just happens to us. We're not active participants in it per se. And so that has been my goal, you know, in joining Pure Romance and like doing all of these things is making sure people understand the power that comes from knowing your body, knowing what you want, and really pursuing those things. And just like the final thing, like the thing that just added icing on the cake to make it even more traumatizing is like once I told my mom that I was no longer a virgin, like she didn't talk to me for a week. And so like it just added insult to injury. So that was my first experience, not to like take it down a bad road, but you know, I think there's a huge disconnect when it comes to men and women when you're talking about crossing the threshold into sex and like what that means for each partner and the responsibilities that come with it.
Well, let me clarify. First of all, you're not taking it down a bad road. We, you know, again, as fun as this conversation could be, this is exactly where we want to go, and I'm blown away by how traumatizing your first experience. I definitely want to hear Dr. Grady's thought again as a professional. But then I'll just say this real quick and turn it over to you, Dr. Grady. I'm just blown away even just hearing her experience, having myself growing up in the Bible Belt of the South and knowing that, quote unquote, she's a church girl, if you will, and that's her first experience. I can only imagine how even more traumatizing with having that church background, that moment is, because I would assume, Ashley, for you, it's like, oh, it's because I sin, I have this disease.
Yeah.
It probably all connects. It ain't got shit to do with that. But I can only imagine, and you was the church girl who waited that long, whereas where I'm from, we think the church girls are the get-offs or the jump-offs, just keeping it a buck. Dr. Grady, please jump in here, kid.
Yeah.
Dr. Gray, did you put yourself on mute, maybe? I still see you on the line.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now. You might have put yourself on mute.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, good.
I think I was listening to that story, and I was just thinking back that, you know, that's not uncommon to guys to try and, I hate to say manipulate, but kind of, you know, set the tone for trusting, that trust me, trust me, trust me. And then she experienced that her first time, which is very traumatic. And then it changes the perspective because it makes you have trust issues about the people saying that they really are into you and want to have that intimacy with you, but trust them to be who they say they are. And so I was just thinking about my first experience that it's funny. I was thinking I could have had sex coming out of eighth grade, and I had the opportunity, but I froze, and I didn't do anything, and I left it at that. But I remember my first experience was with a girl that was probably 2 years older than me in high school, and it was actually somebody I knew's cousin. And it was just like, man, the time she took to teach me, the time she took with me because I didn't know, I think that's what made me appreciate it better because my experience was different. She was really actually nurturing and kind of walked me through the process to get me to understand what I need to do. She wasn't mad because I was kind of hemming and hawing and stamming it. She actually walked me through it. And then from there, I think my experience was different as a male because usually males are the aggressors or at least the foreseers to make it happen. She actually invited me over her house, and I was a little shocked because it was somebody's cousin. And so I couldn't believe that, you know, she was really into me like that. So I just hate that traumatic experience happened for you, especially being a church girl, because, again, there's this certain cognitive ability that, hey, you shouldn't be doing this anyway till you do this, and this. Then for your mom to be mad at you and not talk to you, you know, I understand, but the thing is she should have talked to you. Because now she has to educate you on, hey, you've had that experience, but this is what it needs to be. So, I mean, a lot of times I think that this day and age, even hearing that with you, man, parents don't want to have this conversation now with their kids about sex.
They'll
let somebody else do it. But then their kids are learning on the internet, and then they're mad about the learning on the internet because they won't have those conversations. That's the concern.
No, that's perfect. We're going to go to another cut here, and you'll be surprised. Actually, I have a similar story my second time having sex, so I'll get into that as well. For the callers out there, if you want to get on this discussion, you do have to press 1. If you're online, the number to get in is 646-787-1691. Again, that's 646-787-1691. You have to press 1. Callers, make sure you press 1 if you're trying to speak. If you're just listening via the phone, no problem. We'll be right back. Where all I ask is that you think.
Sit down now.
It was a Sunday, right? Rick and I were kicking it up on Crenshaw. This group of females rolled up in a rabbit. Right? Everybody trying to bum rush, trying to jib in them, right? Man, there was this one girl. Everybody was trying to rush. Baby was torn. You know, body was booming like right out of just centerfold. So I'm like, eyeballing that. She walks right up on me and she busts out, "Is this your ride?" I said, "Yeah, you want to go for a ride with me?" She said, "No, I want to drive." I said, "Can you drive stick?" She said, "I can learn if you teach me." Well, now I go into my Mac Daddy mode because I'm starting to get a Woody in my sweats, right? And I said, "Why don't you give me your number and I'll call you for a lesson?" She does. About a week later, I'm over at her house, right? Her mom and grandma are leaving for church. You know, I walk right up to the door, man. As soon as I go inside, boom, we go at it. Nonstop. Kissing, tugging, right? So I pick her up, take her upstairs. Well, about 20 minutes into it, mom and grandma's come home. Seems grandma forgot her purse. I guess you can smell a sex in the air or something, right? She's straight towards Tisha's room. Now that's the last episode, Tisha. You know, I call every once in a while, but when I do, her mama or grandma pick up the phone and say, she can't talk right now. She busy doing the dishes.
What'd you use?
I used the number she gave me. Man, why are you sweating me? I had to use nothing. She said she was on the pill.
How many times I tell you, if a girl tells you she's on the pill, you use something anyway. Pilling will keep your dick from falling off. I don't understand why you insist on learning things the hard way, Trey, but you're going to learn. Oh, yeah, you're going to learn.
No, you're going to learn today. Welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates, along with special guest co-host Ashley Thomas. Our special guest is Dr. Anthony Grady for this morning's discussion question. First time having sex, memorable or do-over, as we hear another cut again from my favorite movie of all time, Boys in the Hood, as Trey Cooper Gooden Jr. lies to his daddy, which is against the rules of the streets, right? You never lie on your dick, as we used to say as kids. He lied on his dick. But the thing that stood out to me the most in telling the lie, he talking about we was at it for 20 minutes, and this is his first time. So he lied with his lie. Ashley, I hear you laughing, so I'm going to let you get your thoughts off on that cut, then we'll go to Dr. Grady.
Yeah, I feel like it's so pivotal. Like, it's so crazy to me that, like, in having these conversations, right, I think that sometimes adults, parents, whoever, forget that, like, even in you asking kids questions, like, there's this lack of, but do you understand what I'm saying? You know, like, his dad talking to him and being like, you know, the pill is not going to stop your dick from falling off. You know, like, are you making sure that these babies know and understand? Like, you can't approach it from your level of understanding or awareness. You really have to take it from, like, this is someone that does not know the consequences. They don't know what these things mean. And, like, you have to know how your child, your niece, nephew, whoever you're talking to, you have to know how they learn, how they understand things, so you can break it down to them in a way that makes sense. Like, I had an ex-boyfriend. His younger brother was going off to school, you know, and I had a conversation with him. I shared with him my first time and, like, you know, this is what happens. Even with somebody saying something, even with testing, like, you have to do it regularly. You have to be engaged in your sexual health so that you can protect it. And, like, there's nothing wrong with you making the best decision for yourself, but you have to do it from a place where you're informed. And I don't think that we do that enough. As a community, as, like, people looking out for the younger generation, like, we can't assume that they understand what these things say. And, like, that conversation was a perfect example of, like, going a little bit deeper and making sure the comprehension is there.
No, absolutely. Dr. Grady, to your point, when we did a show on, you know, have you talked to your children about sex? And it was alarming that still, like you said, to this day, parents are actually still afraid to have the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
That's what really came out of that show. And so what happened was, in our era, we were coming out of the, in my age group, we were coming out of the AIDS, you know, where the AIDS epidemic was kind of happening at that time. So the beauty of a John Singleton movie was he was throwing it in a movie in a realistic way. So that was kind of like a way for us to catch some of the game, even if our parents wasn't having the conversation. To my Phyllis Smith's credit, she talked to me till I was blue in the face. So my mom did her thing when it came to it, and it was because she didn't want me to repeat her cycle. She had had me at 14, and she was adamant that I not repeat that cycle. So she stayed on me in the worst of ways. But I know for some people, it was a movie cut that gave them a little piece of information that they wasn't even getting at home. Dr. Grady, your thoughts about that cut as well?
You know, funny, when I hear that, you know, I think two things. So sometimes I think too much. One clip is there are not enough dads doing that, what he did to his son, saying, hey, bro, protect yourself. Any fool can make a baby, but it takes a real man to raise one, which he tried to show him when his mom dumped him back to dad to say, hey, look, it's your turn to take care of him. I've always wanted to. The second thing is the misnomer is with black males is, man, excuse my French, fuck as much as you can, get as much as you can because it's out here. And I think that's the misnomer because we send a poor message because then our boys are reckless. As you see, abundance of kids being had with no lack of support or responsibility. So when we go back to the basis, it's like, okay, look, sex is a natural act. Sex is something that's going to be fun and memorable if it's done right. But we also have to be mindful that because of today's society, they expose. Again, I go back to that exposure. There are a lot of kids who are not having sex. That's the funny thing about it. And they're masking it because they're able to get into social media and talk tough and talk how they want to be and be who they want to be. But they're really not doing it at all. And then when they get into it, nobody's having that conversation, especially if their parents have had a bunch of kids. Because what I notice is kids are learned vessels. They learn from who they get it from. And so if you notice, a kid sometimes that has a baby early, the mother had a baby early. If dad has multiple kids, the son has multiple kids. The question is, can we break cycles and teach more the behaviors of, hey, let's be responsible? These conversations aren't being had. You know, and everything is hidden through social media. And so we have to get back to the basis of let's have these real conversations. Even if it's almost like talking about black and white, even if it's going to be a little defining to make me feel a certain type of way, I'd rather have it. I got two girls. And my thing was, ain't no boyfriends. I was rude as hell. Like, my daughter wants to do something, I turned my back, kept walking. I let her know, you got responsibilities first before you bring anybody to me. And so once we get that established, then we do whatever we need to do. But I'm fortunate that they don't have kids. They both have their degrees. And if they decide to do it, that's great.
But right now the focus is get your education. I tell kids all the time, get out of school. You got enough time to do all that funny stuff. But when you get to that ability where you have the mobility to move around, the question is, do you have the tools to be able to manage? So like you're talking about the young man going to school. Yeah, you go to school, you're free to do whatever. But do you have the tools to be responsible? And that's where you see a lot of sexual assault cases, because now you have that freedom with no structure. That's where the disconnect is. Or some of these girls get loose because now they don't have anybody watching them. So there's a lot of things that go into that. So that clip is so powerful. People miss the point. They think it's funny satire, but it has a real message behind it.
No, absolutely. Yeah, that's again. That's it ended up being my, in a sense, favorite movie. I was in high school or whatever, but it was just really. I remember the first movie ever when it ended. I stayed in the movie because the message of fathers are needed was highly put in there. Even though obviously he was putting on display a piece of the world that most of America didn't know. It was America's underbelly or whatever. And now, you know, some of that aspect of that culture is all throughout America, if you will. But the bigger message was, you know, a realistic approach by a father, if you will, of how to handle, in a sense, children today. And so to a degree, to Furious Styles' credit, as you know, obviously a character that Lawrence Fishburne played, what I thought to his credit was even him understanding how to be a part of his son's world, to be able to have the dialogue. And that's another place where our parents sometimes can miss, in my opinion, just throwing it out, right, for something like that, that at the end of the day, our hormones run wild to the point where, as I mentioned, the idea that I was literally in a patch in the woods, I could also imagine that people's first time could have been some crazy place because our hormones are what they are, and eventually we're going to get curious and want to have sex. And so any information from our parents absolutely can help with just the idea of it, and the further you go with it, the more prepared, the better the decision can be made versus having to listen to a peer. Because clearly, even in that example, Lawrence Fishburne, as his character says, you know, did you use anything? And his still son's first response, so clearly saying, I've been telling you to use something. And his first response was, hey, she said I didn't have to because she's on the pill. And his father says, hey, let me reiterate how many times I've been telling you not to make that mistake. And so it really points to, even with the messaging, to Ashley's point, based on a level of understanding, he still kind of missed the boat. So in my opinion, it makes it even more imperative that you figure out how to reach your child so that they will act on it.
Can I add something to that?
Yeah, please add to it.
I got you. Let me add. What you said, listen, you know something that's critical you just said is the responsibility. That's the word that's missing. The ability to take responsibility, because the thing is, we expect, and it's dumb on male's part, is we expect for women to take care of themselves. You're supposed to protect yourself, be on the pill, have everything necessary, and our job is just to give it to you. And I think that's where the problem is, the responsibility that everybody has a role when it comes to sex. Because guess what? At the end of the day, when that baby's made, that's a dual role. And so as I do co-parenting, I realize that even people who plan to have kids or who marry have kids still struggle with the ability of managing the kid. Because now it's a whole other issue. You'll be surprised how many people out there will have intimacy issues because of what they've been through their first experiences.
Right.
See, people don't talk about that, how it carries on. You know, if you were molested, or if you were sexually propositioned, or if you chose to go to college and have a threesome, and then you come back out, or you consider it to be a swinger, or your sexual deviation has changed because of your poor experience, whether you're male or female. The level of responsibility is the word that's always missing when we talk about these things. Everybody has a role, and I'm glad you brought that up, bro, because you'll be surprised how many young boys, man, shit, she's on the pill. Yeah, she said she's going to do this. What about you? Where's your condom? Where's your role at? Because as soon as you get an STD from her, you want to beat her up, you know? And if she get one from you, she's supposed to be okay with that. It's just a mental thing that we have to get better at, especially in black society, you know, that we have to be responsible, because at the end of the day, the scrutiny of us is a lot different than anybody else. And that's what the faction is. We have to figure this out because it's critical, super critical.
We got about a minute before break. Ashley, any thoughts on that before we go to break?
You know, I just kind of feel like all of these points, like, come together and say the same thing. And I think that it's so crazy to me that parents will be like, oh, you know, put their heads in the sand about this situation and know that, like, when you tell a child not to do something, they're going to do it. And so, like, this is the same thing that happens when you ignore it or act like it's not there. These kids are going to have sex. And, like, the best thing that you can do is prepare them for it, right? Like, it's not a matter of if it's going to happen. It's a matter of when. And so, like, you can alleviate some of the feelings that you have behind it just by preparing them, just by making sure that they have the facts, because there are so much stuff out there on the internet that makes no sense. Even when you talk about the female anatomy, there's plenty of women that are clueless in terms of, like, just the correct medical terms to use for female genitalia, right? So,
right.
Like, if that's happening,
let me do this. We're up against the break because I want to get into a lot of what you're talking about right now. So let's do this break, and then we'll get into a lot of what you're talking about is what we understand, especially our first time, right? What did we understand and what didn't we understand? That's something that's worth talking about. So it gets into what you're talking about now. We'll be right back. All I ask is that you think.
Do you need marketing designed specifically to compete in today's digital age? Well, look no further than Emoreg Digital Business Solutions, a marketing agency that's well-equipped to provide solutions to the challenges faced by businesses looking to acquire and retain customers in today's ultra-competitive marketing world. Whether it's video creation, website or logo design, mobile app development, social media and email marketing, or e-commerce design and development, Emoreg Digital Business Solutions has the answer. Visit them at emoregdbs.com. That's EmoregDBS.com. Or call 864-221-3632. That's 864-221-3632. Emoreg Digital Business Solutions. We're the solution to your marketing challenges.
Suki, you full of shit. You know bitch gonna be all your ass no pussy.
I bet you I get more pussy than you.
Yeah. I heard you be getting that dope ass pussy. See me? I get more pussy, you probably get air with your wannabe Mac Dad.
Wannabe Mac? Who you calling wannabe Mac Dad?
You, nigga. No pussy getting motherfuckers. Fucking them dope ass and stupid ass, nigga.
Look. You don't know what I'll be getting. I'll be fucking those dope heads. I might let them suck my dick, but I don't be fucking them. Man, they got AIDS and shit.
Stupid motherfucker, don't you know you can catch that shit from letting them suck on your dick, too?
Thank you. See, I ain't sick. I ain't all skinny and shit.
Nigga, what you mean you ain't skinny? Motherfucker so skinny, you can hoo-hoo through Cheerio. And fool, you ain't got to be skinny or sick. You can die 5 years from now from that shit.
More y'all trying to scare me. No, but can you really get that shit from letting them suck on your dick?
Mark.
Welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates, along with special guest co-host Ashley Thomas. Our special guest is Dr. Anthony Grady, therapist for this morning's discussion question. First time having sex, memorable or do-over, as we hear another cut from, again, Boys in the Hood. Thought it was poignant, and it really kind of going to where you were going, Ashley, so I'm kind of let you pick up first. Is like what you were talking about is even what you think you know, there's still more information to know, and you can see in that example, obviously, harsh language, if you will. We are a raw and uncut show if you haven't figured it out by now. But with that said, he's in there like, oh, you really can get AIDS from having them? So it's like you get a little bit of information but don't have enough information. So you're out here making careless decisions based on some of what you were talking about. So I'll let you pick back up, Ashley.
Yeah. You know, there's just I don't know. So there was this this meme that's floating around, like, I don't understand parents pranking their kids and, like, getting amusement out of that, right? And like, when I think about some of the stuff that happens, like, how are you okay with sending your baby out into the world for anyone to tell them anything, right? Like, that parent-child relationship is already, like, so stressed with, kids thinking that they know everything, they know, they're ready, they're prepared. And, like, as an adult, you're like, you're not ready. And it is the responsibility, as the doctor mentioned, it's your responsibility to go ahead and make sure that they are informed, that you're doing the research for yourself so that you understand, right? And like, it's just so, it's so unfortunate because there's so many things out here that will tell these kids what it is or what you're supposed to be doing, and there's no consideration for someone's mental state. There's no consideration for the physical, the emotional. There's no consideration for that. It's just sex, and, like, there's so many things that happen behind it that can make it traumatizing, and, like, even speaking on my own experience, like, it made it very difficult for me to have sex after that and to, like, really trust people because This is not what anyone talked about. This is not what anyone described. And, like, we have a responsibility in protecting ourselves and in protecting future generations to be honest with them and to share our struggle can understand, right? And, like, you don't have to go into full details, but I think a lot of people just don't tell their kids something to protect them, and, like, you're doing a disservice. And I'm telling you, these kids are seeing more than that, than what they're seeing online. I remember, like, one of my friends, her little cousin would always be around us because she was younger and she had to watch her. And, like, I would curse around her, and she was like, why are you cursing around her? I was like, please believe me when I say this little girl probably knows all these curse words and more. And her little cousin is in the background cracking up. And I didn't do it so, like, oh, I just want to curse. But I'm now establishing a safe space for this little girl to know that, one, I know what she's going through, two, that she can talk to me because she can relate to me. And that's always been my goal whenever I talk to younger kids. Like, let me find a way to relate to you, to convey this information to you in a way that you understand.
Ah, beautiful. Let me throw this out and hear, you want to hear both of your thoughts to it. Again, if you're out there on the line, don't be afraid to call in and get on this discussion. 646-787-1691. Again, 646-787-1691. The callers, I see y'all out there. If y'all just listening, no problem. If you want to get in, you do need to press 1. Here's a thought when I listen to that cut as well, is just the idea of the myths that you had going into your first time, if you will. And not that everything that you heard or whatever applied to your first time, but I just even remember growing up in the country and how when guys would, in a sense, get their first little peach fuzz or whatever, like, I never believed this, but I remember this being said, and some of the guys did believe it, but they literally would say, oh, you just started eating pussy. Like, that was just like a little stupid little myth that floated around my country town that a lot of guys actually thought that that was the case. And if the guy had actually done that, he would say, yeah, I've been doing it. So it was kind of like confirmed for a lot of the guys. And they were older guys or whatever. I thought it was clownish. It didn't make sense to me. But I'm just saying, these are little small myths. So Dr. Grady or Ashley, can y'all remember any little silly, just to kind of highlight what you're talking about, Ashley, how little you know. And one day you're going to enter into your first sexual experience. So can y'all recall some of the things you had heard or knew prior to your first sexual experience that now, you know, they're clowns to think about as adults, but these things that, you know, your friends talked about or heard, any myths that y'all heard? I'll start with you, Dr. Grady. Can you think of anything?
Yeah, I think for me was, I just think, let me see, what's the biggest thing coming from? I'm from Chicago, so it's definitely a different ball of wax here. I think that, the myth was, there's so many things that went on here. I think the one about eating pussy was really true because we had that here. You know what I mean? Is that? But I think the myth was, as soon as you start getting hair on your nuts, you're supposed to pick yourself. And that means that it's time for you to get busy. And I think that was the biggest misnomer because, hell, I couldn't eat pee straight, but I was going through puberty. And I think that was the biggest thing. Carl, you know, I never, honestly, when I think about it, shit, I never talked to my dad about sex. Never. Like, we've never had that conversation. And so I think that everything that was said was from older boys. And a lot of stuff they were saying was, you know, you do this, you do that, you do this.
Mm-hmm.
But I think even then, growing up, eating, oral sex was a misnomer. Because the girls were like, ew. And boys were like, nah, I ain't doing that. I don't know where you've been. And so I think that when you started doing that, it made it like you was like the man. Like, dude, he ate that. Like, you was a god. But realistically, you really wasn't, because it was just a misnomer. And so I think that was the biggest thing. You know, I think that people was like, if you do that, you're a nasty dude. not understanding that that's part of sexual encounter. So I think that was the biggest misnomer growing up, was that if you eat it, oh, you're a nasty-ass dude. We can't do nothing with you. And I think exactly. That's what the biggest thing.
Yeah, that was definitely within the culture. I want to further talk about that, but I want to hear any myths that you were that you had heard that, you know, obviously you're a joke to you now as an adult, but any myths you recall prior to ever having your first sexual experience that was big in your where you're from or whatever, Ashley?
Nope. You know, like growing up in the church and all of that, like we if my friends were having sex, I didn't know it because I was the good girl. So, yeah, and my mom did not play that. Like, I got caught hugging a boy, like, on the side of the gym, and my mom, like, went off.
No.
So, you know, like,
so,
I
yeah,
never
so,
heard any myths.
So you never
my
got
mom never talked
to
me.
Yeah, you never got
listen. So I never heard any myths. The only thing that I knew was that sex was going to be painful because that's what the movie showed. That's what everything showed. And the reality is that it's just everybody is different. And so it may or may not be painful. Depends. But, like, that's probably the only thing I ever heard about sex.
I got you. So let's further dig into, which, as you say, you were a nasty guy, whatever. And so culturally, growing up in the era, because as we said, I would imagine that with the exposure that the youth have now, that the oral sex is part of their world, no problem. But I definitely remember when I went off to college and where I was also experiencing this in high school, it was kind of understood within our, in the race that, in a sense, black girls didn't give head and black men to a degree wouldn't give head. Because like you said, Dr. Grady, same thing in my, you know, in, for us as well. But what we did say all the time was that white girls would do it all the time. And it was understood that white boys would do it all the time because we had this concept that the oral sex either way was relatively nasty or whatever. And so I remember all the way through my junior in college, I ended up having a white guy as a roommate. And he told me this, and I was so intrigued by this. And I think it's cool to share during this story. So I went to a military school, about 4,000 students or whatever. So over the time, you know, kind of a small college or whatever, if you will. And so so you kind of know everybody. And he ended up telling me the dynamic. And we were talking about the idea of how, what I was just talking about, how was it the cool thing to do. Now, of course, we're in college and, you know, oral sex is not an issue then. But for whatever reason, we were talking about our backgrounds. And so I was explaining to him, because he had never heard this, that how oral sex was kind of taboo when I was younger. And he told me that as a white guy, he says, for us, a couple things. He says, we don't have game to convince a woman to give us any. So our game is we'll do oral sex in hopes that one day she'll let us actually have sex. And that's when I responded. I was like, that blows my mind because in our culture, we're the exact opposite. We will have sex and hope that she gives us head, and vice versa, she hopes that we will. So that just blew his mind. Here's the last thing, and I would love to hear y'all thoughts. And the last thing he explained to me, that even at that school, again, a smaller college, he said amongst the white guys, they knew that girls who did this, there were girls in college at our school who were considered virgins because they would only do oral still to this day. And some of those girls, their standard was they were still going to wait to marriage to actually have sex. So the oral allowed them to participate in sexual activity but to never be penetrated. That was mind-blowing. And I thought to myself, I'm like, that shit makes so much sense. But it would never go over in our culture. Dr. Grady, I'll start with you.
I agree with you. I think that even in black culture, though, that was the same thing, though. You know, if I give you head or if I let you suck on my chest or touch me, it doesn't consist as sex. You know, we fooling around, but it ain't sex. And for a long time. But the girls who were doing that in college, they was hoes. Or they bugged out. They out there. And so that was the thing, you know. And so the that wasn't too far from what he was saying. It's just that in some black cultures, that was the same thing too. Like, man, I still feel like if I give you head, it ain't sex. So I can't be wrong for that. But again, the stereotype was that any black girl who was doing that, she was a rat. And everybody was trying to get out of it because that was the experience, because she was ahead of most people. And so, again, it's no different. I just think that we have grown as a group, but I think we still got a long way to go because we have so many other things we got to work on and work through that, just, to me, is just a lot more needed in order for us to be more understanding. Because now these kids are doing mm-hmm. everything. They're doing yeah. everything. And so it's not even a thought or a process to say, look, hey, take your time, do this, because they're doing everything. And that's where the issue is. So now oral sex, oh, shit, it's like, man, shit, she doing oral sex, that's nothing. But this chick doing this, they doing threesomes and foursomes. And so it's like just the stigma or the stereotype of what's going on in today's society has definitely just changed from when I went to college back in 89, you know, and then understanding that, because the goal was, man, you're in college, man, you get as much action as you want without nobody saying nothing. But not realizing that I have buddies who had babies freshman year of college. Now they dads. They still 18. And they still don't know how they're going to get through paying their tuition. So, I mean, it's just a different era. I don't even understand how to explain these kids today what they're doing. It's just totally very different from when we grew up.
Well, partly due to these lack of messaging, and they're raised with social media and have access to, as you said, I may have seen my, which was the situation. I fought, you know, sneaking in, or not sneaking in, but, you know, running on my mom. That's a very different experience to being exposed to it every day. And so it makes it more imperative that people have these conversations. We are up against the break. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show, where all I ask is that you think.
Hey, where did you get that hat and t-shirt? I like that.
Oh, I got this at moneymotivation.com. It's fresh, right?
Yes, and I love the message on it, too. You are the hustle, huh?
That's what the shirt says. I am the hustle. They embody the entrepreneurial spirit, and what I like the most, it's more than a brand. It's a lifestyle for those who want to put in the work and expect to have the finer things in life. I also follow them on Instagram. Check this post out.
If you believe money is the root of all evil, you're using it wrong?
Or how about this one? Excuses made $0 an hour.
I like those. What's their IG?
At moneymotivation.co.
But do they have any ladies' gear?
Yes, you're going to love the clothing line they got for the ladies. Matter of fact, pull up their website, moneymotivation.com, and I'm going to get you a few things so we can both look like money.
Everywhere I go, go, and everywhere I be, I don't even talk, they still know it's me. Cause I look like money, smell like money, talk like money, even walk like money.
Truth seekers, please understand, Mental Dialogue is much more than just a talk show. Each and every Saturday, we communicate with you for two reasons, to dialogue and connect. On the dialogue side, we cater to you intellectual outcasts who feel you have no place for honest discourse on race, sex, culture, and African-American business. On the connect side, we've created a community where you can connect with experts specifically in finance, whether personal or business, and mental health, whether it's trauma or to optimize performance, along with all the other skill sets from other MD community members. Our mission was to create a virtual nationwide neighborhood where African Americans learn to trade ideas, goods, and services through social media, meetup, and this podcast. To become a neighbor of the Mental Dialogue Community Club, please visit us at mentaldialogue.com. We are better with you than we are without you. We can be neighbors even though we don't live next to each other. Hashtag raise the culture.
Dialogue and connect. That's what we do at the Mental Dialogue Community Club. We are not just a talk show. We are here to connect you to people like our special guest, Dr. Anthony Grady, specializing trauma therapist and many things. Our special guest, Ashley Thomas, so you will hear more about her, and some of you already know she does our Making Money Matter Mondays, which is where mental health and money meet. Every second Monday of the month. So again, we are more than just a talk show. This is just our opportunity to communicate as we end up trying to connect you to people that you need, who can provide you seeds for you to progress your own life. That's what we're here for, not just a talk show. With that said, this morning's discussion question, first time having sex, memorable or do-over? So yes, very different era. Dr. Grady said a lot there. But I wanted to explore something that I'm starting to see is dialogue, and I'm pretty sure you heard this to you or Blue in your face, Ashley, is dialogue about the idea of even, in a sense, waiting to marriage, or even if it's not a waiting to marriage, but just kind of understanding to a degree how we've, in a sense, maybe went a little overboard in our sexual freedom aspects of this country, if you will, and people are starting to realize maybe they should be more intentional, if you will, about their partnerships, or if they're, especially if they're wanting to elevate to a marriage, and learning these aspects of, in a sense, less sex or no sex prior to marriage. So I just wanted to hear some thoughts about how that even plays in a world, as Dr. Grady said, where people are just out here and everything's okay. There's nothing taboo. Have you heard, you know, that train of thought, and can it even apply in 2022, in your opinion, Queen?
I think it's possible. There are definitely, I mean, there's fewer people that are holding on to that aspiration than probably when we were growing up, because, like, you know, waiting until marriage was like something that is preached on in the church, and, you know, there's something to be said about, like, the quote-unquote virtuous woman. So I think it's still possible, but I think that it would require being able to have those open and honest conversations with people, just so that they feel, one, knowledgeable, but two, so that they're making that decision from a place of power and not necessarily peer pressure and everything else that's going on. And I think that comes down to critical thinking and making sure that your child understands the responsibility, what happens once this changes, what are the pros and cons, what are the consequences, so that they can decide for themselves, like, is this something that I really want to do? And I feel like, you know, all of those little tangents in there is the part where we are lacking in reaching those kids and making sure that they understand everything. I feel like most people either approach it as, like, until you're married, or this could happen, and then they show you, like, pregnancy, they show you STDs, they show you all of these things, or it's like, you know, you're going to go ahead and do it anyway, so do it, versus, like, here are the ways that you could go. Here's what could happen. And listening to, like, everything before the commercial and getting to this point, I was like, people are probably so knee-deep in their own shame and guilt around their own experiences, or not even going back to think about those experiences, that they forget about those things and forget to include those in conversations. And I think that's how we really change it and empower people to make the decision of, like, do I wait? Do I give in? Do I just do oral? You know, just by sharing our stories and sharing our feelings behind it and work through those things, instead of projecting our own insecurities, our own shame, our own guilt onto these younger people or even our peers, and trying to get them to do or avoid the same things that we did.
No, I love what you're saying right here, and I'm pretty sure Dr. Grady has a lot to say with it as well. And so let me just kind of move into what you're talking about, is to realize that as adults, that, as you just said, Ashley, there are still aspects of what we learned early, or our own experiences, that are still with us when it comes to the aspect of sex, to the point where you don't think, let me make sure my child, my niece, my nephew, my cousin isn't out there on their own like I was. So we unfortunately repeat the cycle of not sharing, because we're still unfortunately contending with what we heard, the myths we learned, the fear that we were told. Here's something that got brought up on last week's show by one of our callers, Frank, which was amazing, and I think it's pertinent at this moment. And Dr. Grady, I want to hear your thoughts to this. And so he, on last week's show, we were talking about, do wives do sex as a chore or whatever, and one of our callers, Frank, one of our members, Mental Dialogue members support us, if you will, one of our members called in, and he said that in his culture, he's from Ghana, that there's so much fear and shame around the aspect of sex, that even with the women, many of them still waiting till marriage, the sex in marriage is so bad for the man because they're still operating within the marriage from a place of this is a bad thing to do. So they don't even have freedom within the sex to even apply it properly to their husband. And he offered that in his culture, a lot of men have women on the side to get those fantasies that their wives would never give them because they've been taught so much shame and fear around sex that they actually will apply it even though they are allowed to do it within the marriage. Your thoughts, Dr. Grady, to that, because I think it absolutely plays a role in what we're talking about today.
I mean, you know, it's funny. I was listening to the whole thing. I think that one thing that I hear is I think things have been so widely accepted this day and age. Like, it's okay to be a swinger and it's okay to do this. I think the roles of sex and understanding has changed dramatically. I think even with that situation, I think that's not even just in Ghana. I think that's today. That if my girl ain't doing what I want her to do, there's somebody that's going to do it. So I'm going to get that experience. But then I got to justify why I did it because you ain't do what you said you was going to do. Because I think that we don't learn together sexually. We learn from our own experiences and we try to blend it together. I think that's where the disconnect is because we start having sex and making love, a fucking, a screwing. But are we really learning what pleases each other other than the fact that you have an orgasm, I have one. You may have a couple, I may not. What are we doing to learn each other in this process, which will eliminate some of that? I think the other thing, too, is that people are not even telling it. I think there's a small point saying, hey, don't have babies now. But some of this stuff is glorified. Like when a kid has a baby, when I was growing up, they send your ass down south. You disappear for 6 years, 10 years. And so I think to me, that's where the disconnect has really become an issue. And so we have to get back to making sure that the responsibility and the level of responsibility are there across the board. And so no different than back then, we go back to some of those old school value systems. Because guess what? The grandparents were the one really saying, hey, look, we can't do this, do that, do this, while the parents were still trying to figure out who they were. The roles are definitely reversed and what we see is sex. Sex is wide open now. Shit, it don't make no difference. It could be anything and people are okay with it. That's the problem.
Yeah, here's how it leads to a problem within our relationships to kind of jump to that space. And for the callers out there, if you want to get in, you do have to press 1 to let us know you want to speak. I see a couple of callers out there. If you're online, the number to get in is 646-787-1691. Again, that's 646-787-1691. And press 1 to let us know you want to speak. So how being out there, as you said, and opening things are just like you said, it's kind of open season, if you will. So here's the aspect of the difficulty of actually trying to consummate a real relationship or a marriage, if you will, is when it comes to the sex, something that is extremely important to the actual relationship, right, is sometimes a lot of these experiences, unfortunately, hurt how you will move when you say, you know what, I am ready to settle down. I am ready to be responsible for a family, whether that's male or female, right? And so the sex part is you've had so many experiences for some people that having your spouse be enough can be very, very, very difficult due to all of these exposures because, as you said, Dr. Grady, anything goes. And so it's almost like, in my opinion, that it's time to look at exactly what we're doing because spending your 20s and 30s running through women if you're a man or flip, you know, or vice versa for a woman, running through various men, if you will, you don't even realize you're hurting your own prospect if one day you're wanting to end up with, in a sense, a family that you're responsible for. At least I'll throw that out as my first thoughts. Dr. Grady, any thoughts to what I'm saying in reference to how often as we get older down the line, we want this ultimate prize and don't realize we've hurt ourselves along the way, all from our very first sexual experience, all the way to that moment of saying, you know what, now I want to be responsible for a family.
I mean, I don't agree with you. I disagree. I don't disagree with you. I think that's 100% on target. I think that we process. I don't think a lot of people process in real time. I think that's part of the issue. We process after the fact. And once it's gone, we realize all of a sudden, hey, we should have did this. I just think that, you know, that first experience, your second experience, and your third experience all play a part because they piggyback each other. That first experience is what starts it. The next two is what builds it. If you can't get between 1 and 3, how to get what you need out of that process, it's going to be a long road or an up and down road for you. And if you look at, even look at some of the things that go on today, why are we not doing things such as threesomes and foursomes and swingers? What are we really trying to get out of this? Where's the pleasure at? Because, you know, intimacy was a real private thing where it's not wide open and it's being accepted in manners that now it triggers so many other conversations. And the thing is that our kids are exposed to it. I think that's, again, why I go back to that exposure. It used to be such a secrecy, and you had to learn that as you went. Now it's wide open. And so when you start talking about now as a man, I want to have a family, I want to settle down. But the question is, how much can you do that? Once you settle down, when does that urge kick back in for what you was longing for or looking for? That's the million-dollar question. You know, so
that is the million-dollar question. Yeah, that is the million-dollar question. No, absolutely. We're up against the break. We're going to take this in a different direction because, again, we want to go deep with this conversation. We'll be right back and listening to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show, where all I ask is that you think.
Hey, Smith, where you find that Prince Sign of the Times on vinyl at? Real talk, you got a dope vinyl collection. What, you been collecting them, like, over the years or something?
No, actually, I just started my collection. But my man Tobago over at DBS Sounds, he be hooking me up. You remember DBS Sounds?
On the south side? They still around? I figured most of the record stores in Atlanta be closed by now.
Hey, vinyl is the new wave, and DBS Sounds got the best collection in town. You can still go there and flip through vinyl. They still got CDs and mixtapes, too. Let me check their IG page at DBS Sounds ATL. They still be having artists in stores and everything. Hey, you want to run by there?
Hey, man, I ain't got time right now. I got to go back to Cali tomorrow, but I might have to catch them next time I'm in.
Oh, nah, you good. Even when you get home, you can just shop at their online store at dbssounds.com. They'll ship directly to you anywhere in the country. Matter of fact, jump on dbssounds.com on your phone and order straight from there.
Word? Hey, I'm about to get my music game up. Hey, what's their address in case I get a chance to swing by there? I'm going to pick up that new Kendrick Lamar CD.
Oh, they at 6604 Highway 85, Riverdale, Georgia.
Bet.
They wrote this work. The victim was 16 years or less. But this conversation is needed so much that it's hard for me, as a man, before you ever gave me this thought, it was hard for me to see the young boy as a victim. Because think about how it got exposed. It was the 60-year-old boy showing the video to his football friend. Because that's a bragging point for a 16-year-old. I caught that little pretty 20-year-old substitute. Like, that's how the 16-year-old is treating it. Like, let's keep that above. But now we're saying, hold on. That's a problem. So it is something we got to figure out how to delve into.
Right. And, you know, I think men and women tend to experience things or express their experiences in different ways. So when a minor woman or minor female experiences an older man violating her, you might hear that experience or see that experience on her. You might see the depression. You might see the issues, like visibly see it. Like, oh, wow, this had a negative impact on this person. A boy, he might be smiling and joking and stuff like that while he's 16, and he might genuinely feel happy. Like, yo, I've smashed a substitute teacher. Okay, what happens when he's 36 and 46 and he has to go drive past the high school or whatever? Or he see a little girl walking down the sidewalk. You know, where's that boundary? Where's the psychological boundary in his mind on if he's going to approach that girl for sexual favors or not? So now, yeah, you smash a substitute teacher at 16. Now when you're 36, 46. Now that cycle, that emotional memory revisits you. Oh, I can do this. This is actually okay. Whether you're conscious of it or not, I'm pretty sure it comes back to you. Well, it was done to me, so it's obviously a boundary that I can. So that's why I said we just need to talk about these things more and try to talk about it in a way where we're not demonizing the person that committed the sin. They definitely deserve to be punished and all this stuff. But sometimes we get so caught up in demonizing them and, oh, that creep, they deserve to die. They need to be buried under the jail. That we lose time on unpacking how, what's going on in the mechanics of a person's mind that crosses that boundary. What happened?
Welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates, along with special guest co-host Ashley Thomas. This morning's discussion question, first time having sex, memorable, or do-over, our special guest is Dr. Anthony Grady. trauma therapist is with us this morning as we're digging into this conversation. And you hear a cut actually from one of our video podcasts named Just My 3 Cents. That brother was Eli Marcus. And we were talking about, I don't know if you ever recall the situation where the substitute teacher got in trouble with the young man down in Florida sometime last year. And we were digging into that. And first time sex for a lot of people, unfortunately, can be a predatory situation, such as what you just heard from the standpoint of your first time with someone who was not just older than, you know, mine was 11 and 14, if you will. But again, we're still both young and teenagers, if you will. But your first time could be 16 and 20, 16 and 22. And that's not, unfortunately, uncommon. And so what if that's your first experience, like you, in a sense, hear Eli talk about, and now you have no sense of boundaries when you actually grow of age? Dr. Grady, any thoughts in hearing, again, this first-time conversation can go a lot of places.
Yeah, I mean, hearing that, I mean, but again, it's perception. So, you know, for boys, depending on what group you're in and where you're at, that shit is you the man. With females, it's depending on the females, they can say that you got privilege, or it goes into reverse that you got taken advantage of. Again, I think it's all about your perception of the situation and how you see it. I think that, you know, because men and women look at sex so different and they look at the behavior so different, it's just determined based on the individual situation. I do think that people get – there are predators that look at people's weakness, especially kids, and try and lure them in. But then I think there's those that really are interested in the kid, and the kids are interested in them, which is ironically funny. And I know people may not agree with that, but there's a 16-year-old that likes his substitute teacher who's 22, and she's attractive, and she thinks he's attractive because he has a little physical shape. The question is it appropriate? And I think that's the main issue. And how we view that appropriateness then determines on how we deal with other things. So some gray areas there that we have to look at the end of the day.
And the gray area becomes very gray if they actually go through with it, right, Ashley? Like if we're honest, culturally it's been okay, especially years ago, for older men to, in a sense, even wife a teenage wife, if you will, right? And so there's cultural aspects that we, in a sense, frown upon. But when you actually go through with your first act of sex, that can change things greatly in your understanding. Your thoughts as a woman hearing that cut, where we're, in a sense, talking about, in a sense, the man, quote unquote, as I admitted on that video, I still had trouble seeing him as a victim, because at 16, I definitely would have felt like I was the man. From, like you said, based on my male perspective. But let's dialogue about this. Again, this is part of first-time sex, because sometimes it is with a much older person, unfortunately.
So I would say that there's a whole nother aspect that has not even come into it, which is like self-worth, self-esteem, and are we affirming our little girls? Because I've always been overdeveloped, right? So for the people that have never seen me, like, right, I've been 5'5 since I was in third grade. So I've never had any problems with bullies because I've always been tall. I started getting breasts when I was in third grade. I was wearing my mom's bras in fifth grade. So I was a triple D in fifth grade.
Wow.
I've always had the same shape. So I've had thick thighs. I've had a butt. I've been hourglass shaped my entire life. And I never as a little girl heard my mom tell me that I was beautiful or anything. So for me, when I was growing up, like if an older guy was approaching me, it felt good to be able to get that attention because here's someone that sees me. It wasn't until I was older to realize like how predatory that is. But this, like, there's so much that we have to do to protect our babies and to affirm them and make sure that they know their worth and that they understand things, because there are people out there that are looking at that. And like, as a little girl, I felt like the shit because like, here's this older guy that's trying to like, you know, holler mm-hmm. at me or like talk to me, and it makes you feel good. But then to be an adult and see that now is like, What are we doing to protect our babies? And I hate the narrative when people like call little girls fat because of all. No, these are grown ass men that are approaching these babies that don't understand, that don't get it all the way. And you cannot put this on these little girls. And right. Like, even for any little girl that might be as fast as you think she is or whatever, No, the onus is on the man, the grown-ass man that knows what the hell he's doing, and not on the little girl. And, like, culturally, we are very quick to call our little girls fast or something else. They're babies. They don't know what the hell is going on. And, like, how are we protecting our little girls?
Yeah, we're making excuses. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I grew up hearing that term, especially in the South, little fast ass and things of that nature. And it was so common. It was so common that you didn't think about that really you're protecting the perpetrator by referring to the child as being fast, right?
I'm about to say that. I agree with you. Nope. I agree with you. That's facts.
Yeah. As a whole culture, we're lining up protecting the perpetrator just by speaking that language and making it normal, because we obviously didn't think it was a problem because we would say it out loud amongst each other. So we're all okaying. So we spend more time trying to make sure our children are not bad.
Yep. Right.
But
so then this
turns the perpetrator accountable. We don't hold that person accountable, and we know exactly who it is. And we actually let them get away with it and hold the kids more accountable for their behavior. How does that work?
Yes. Yes. And so now we create this cycle where these little girls now, you know, like that's the same attention that they're seeking. That's the same thing that they're looking for. They're looking for men to approach them, to like, quote unquote, hunt them, right? Like it's about the chase now. And they're still not understanding what has happened, how someone has taken advantage of their naivete, you know, like this is what's happening. And so like what now, when you talk about entering relationships and like engaging in sex as an adult, like to Dr. Grady's point where processing happens after, what happens then? What safe space are you creating for your partner to be able to strip those layers and unpack those things and it be that you still continue to show up and you still continue to create a safe space for them? Because anyone that has had a traumatic experience, the thing that will take you into your shell even more is thinking that you have a safe space to open up about these things and that not be the case. And I would really challenge people that look at sex as like just an act or something like that to look at it as something more. And like, how did this impact this person? How has it shaped and changed their world? How are they showing up for me? And like, for me, it's just a call for grace, because where you could choose to talk about someone or treat them negatively, you can also choose to step back and look at it and be like, oh my gosh, this person encountered all of these things and like they're still trying to show up and be vulnerable with me. How am I going to handle this with care? How will we handle each other with care when we have the ability to open up and share our scars? And like, so much of what we experience in our community, and not just sex, is like this tradition of fear, right? Like that is our generational curse as a community. Everything that we have experienced in this country has been about fear. And until we can really see each other and create safe spaces for each other, like what we're doing right now on the show, until we can have those opportunities, like it's always going to be a clash for our babies, for us, for seeing each other, for actually hearing each other and understanding each other and giving each other grace, because these things connect with each other. These small steps lead to big steps that have big impact on people, and we're missing that. And we're missing how to handle each other with love and kindness and compassion and grace.
Yeah, we're missing it to the point where these early experiences. Go ahead, Dr. Grady.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. I'm sorry.
No, I'm not. We got about a minute and a half. Okay.
Listen,
okay.
My new question is, how do we address this situation? We talk about first-time sexual experiences, predators, making poor choices, fear, lack of communication, lack of understanding, lack of communicating to understand through the social media aspect that's dealing with our kids today, because we have to look at what we're dealing with now. Social media drives everything our kids do. how do we address sex and that first-time experience while dealing with social media, which is now our new challenge? Because our kids have a whole different world. As parents, we're on one realm. These kids are 10 realms deeper than what we are, and we can never catch them. So how do we deal with that aspect? Because that's the newest phenom now, this internet and sex and exposure.
Yeah, that's real. I would just offer, not saying this is the full answer, but my first initial thought is a little what we're doing now, and also understanding that the things you're talking about, because they're so natural, we're going to do the, you know, humans are going to, I always say, humans are going to eat, sleep, and fuck no matter what, right? And so because those are natural things, even what we're doing now will still always have trouble competing, because there's more desire for those things. So even, you know, even in me offering that what we're doing now is a solution, I'm offering that very, very aware of that it's not going to be taken in the massive way to the things that you're talking about, Dr. Grady. But I am highlighting that for parents asking that question. There are places on the internet who are, you know, have more reach than I have. I reach about 1,000. Sometimes I'll hit 2,000 in a month, but I'll reach 1,000 a month. That's very minimal. But there are places on the internet that are doing what we're doing now bigger and better. And so in a sense, because it's the information age, I would challenge, to answer your question, that parents go seek out the places where they can present their children more wholesome options on the internet. It doesn't mean they're not going to go sneak over there and see it anyway, but here's the unfortunate reality. As the hip-hop generation, early in hip-hop, there was some balance in the music. The issue that we see now is we feel like there's less balance on the commercial side of things. So I'm just highlighting to say, as much as you can find that presents positive imaging to compete with what they see on the internet every day, that's your first bet. Because there's plenty of options on the internet, but you have to go seek it and put it in your children's face. That's my first response. We're up against the break. I definitely want to hear Ashley's thought to that when we come back from the break. You're listening to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show, where all I ask is that you think. I see your caller out there. If you want to get in, you do have to press 1 to get in the conversation. 646-787-1691, and you can give us your 3 cents. I'm never surprised when I do sex shows, people are afraid to call in and talk. It happens every time. Every other week I got five, six people calling. But when I do sex shows, never a caller. Never a caller for these shows. All right, we'll be right back.
Do you need marketing designed specifically to compete in today's digital age? Well, look no further than Emorage Digital Business Solutions, a marketing agency that's well-equipped to provide solutions to the challenges faced by businesses looking to acquire and retain customers in today's ultra-competitive marketing world. Whether it's video creation, website or logo design, mobile app development, social media and email marketing, or e-commerce design and development, Emorage Digital Business Solutions has the answer. Visit them at emorejdbs.com. That's EMOREJDBS.com, or call 864-221-3632. That's 864-221-3632. Emorage Digital Business Solutions. We're the solution to your marketing challenges.
Talk to your new girlfriend.
Look, I took the hold of Burger King.
Cheap date.
You should have time for me.
So you messed around to prove a point?
What'd I just say? No, you got your head so far up your ass, it took a cheap date for you to notice me.
What cute man, did I forget to kiss your ass like everybody else?
You forgot to be there.
That night you wanted to talk about your dad, I had curfew. What was I supposed to do?
Stay.
If I stayed, I wouldn't be starting.
Well, at least you got your priorities straight.
I've never asked you to choose.
You never have to.
I'm a ball player. If anybody knows what that means, it should be you.
If basketball is all you care about, why are you boning me? Why don't you bone Dick Vitale? Wait a minute. Hold on.
How do I know the next time you're feeling neglected or whatever, you're not going to just run around on me? If we're going to be together, I have to be able to trust you.
I'm not asking for us to be together.
What?
I'm going through a lot of shit right now. It's obviously more than you got time for.
How are you going to tell me what I have time for? I mean, whatever I did, we can fix this.
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
Look, I'm entering a draft.
You what?
I'm going pro. And who knows where I'm going to end up, you know?
When did you decide all this?
A few days ago.
So that's it. Just forget about you and me.
I still like us to be friends. Look, I'll see you around.
Welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates, along with special guest co-host Ashley Thomas. This morning's discussion question, first time having sex, memorable or do-over? As we hear a cut from another one of my favorite movies, Love and Basketball, Sanaa and Omar Epps, their characters break up in that moment. And I brought this to the table because here's another unfortunate reality of entering this space of sex quite often is we're in the boyfriend-girlfriend era. This is really a kind of a unique era, as much as it, and as common as it is and as much as it makes sense, and this is the normal process. Humans have really never dated. When you look into the history of relationships and marriage, dating is kind of a new phenomenon for the human experience. And so when you start getting into, okay, well, now we're going to go ahead and intersex into the situation, what the cut we just heard, and Ashley, we'll start with you. The cut that we just heard, and Dr. Gray, you have daughters. The unfortunate reality is that's more likely how, if you are fortunate enough to have a sexual experience, because if I remember in the movie, Omar Epps was her first, right? She wasn't his first, but he was her first. And so if you're even fortunate enough to have a so-called committed boyfriend after your first sexual experience, if you even go through that experience, more than likely it's going to end some way, somehow, with this type of pain. So in even experiencing and enjoying your first time experience, if you get tied to someone, it's more than likely that that will be the end, because as you heard in that clip, men to a degree, or boys, are naturally going to be more selfish and do their thing when they feel like you ain't meeting the standard. It happens quite often. So I think that too should be part of the conversation, not just the sex itself, but the emotions that come with it. And in my opinion, there's also good advice to consider avoiding that in situations that are not going to be long-term. And early on, like Dr. Grady has smartly advised his girls, handle your business, because early on, we don't know nothing about loving y'all as young boys. That's real talk. Ashley, your thoughts, queen.
That movie is just, I don't want to use toxic because it's so overplayed, but I don't think we really question the expectations that we place on other people. And I think this comes back to processing those emotions after the fact. And it's so unfortunate because I think oftentimes we're so starving for connection that we turn to other people before we turn to ourselves. And like, I'm 100% guilty of that as well. And so I think, you know, if nothing more, this clip has highlighted like how important it is that we know ourselves, that we know what we're going through. And then we ask people for what we need. We don't expect it. We don't demand it. We ask for it. And we create a space where people can honestly tell us whether they have the capacity to do that. You know, like, and if the shoes were turned in that clip, I feel like, you know, it would be if she was not understanding of him having to meet curfew, she would have just been a horrible girlfriend, right? And so, like, are you really creating space for people to show up and give you what you need because you're asking for it? And I don't think that that's coming to it. And I think that's part of the reason why we have to have these conversations. Why? And part of the question before going into this clip was, like, you know, like, how do we bridge that gap? How do we overcome it? And I feel like it's by acknowledging ourselves, by welcoming ourselves home and getting to know ourselves so that we can interact with people on a level that makes sense. Because everybody that we meet is not someone that we should be interacting with sexually, relationship, friendship-wise, whatever the case may be. Like, not everyone can be the capacity that you want them in. And until we know ourselves and have honest conversations about ourselves and what we need, we can't even go about having the appropriate people in our lives.
Absolutely. Dr. Grady, we did an amazing show called Why I Won't Let My Daughter Have a Boyfriend. It is partly because of this cut. But want to hear your thoughts, kid, because, again, typically even being focused on having them not have sex too early, as we said earlier in the show, eventually that's to a degree probably going to happen for most. And so what is also not being included is all the additional stuff that goes with it. And then when it comes down to the specifics between the genders and men, boys, generally speaking, being more naturally selfish, we keep our head on the swivels. As I said on that show, young girls are not taught to keep their head on the swivel. So by keeping their head on the swivel, meaning don't have sex with a bunch of boys, but don't let somebody tie you down with the title a girlfriend, and their head's going to still be on the swivel naturally, whether even if they have good intentions. That's why it's very imperative that you understand, and in my opinion, narrow down your involvement, sexual involvement, if you will, when it's going to play on your emotion and scar you for future relationships. Your thoughts, Dr. Grady? We got a caller action.
You know, it's funny. When I heard that clip, you know, I know that movie very well because it's also one of the greats. But I was just thinking, and as you said, this is an open show. So I recall my daughter, Grady, go to Miami for one of her first trips. My daughter's in college, sorority. She's doing what she wants to. So I remember my frat brother, because I'm in a fraternity. So we were talking to her because she had told me, well, you know, I go out and, you know, guys buy us drinks. We ain't got to have no money. And I was like, at first, my first, are you fucking out of your mind? That was my first response. my line brother said, and he kind of threw me for a loop because he's just like me. And he was like, are you silly? He said, you're going to have to suck some dick or get smashed up. They ain't just want nothing for nothing. And my daughter was looking like, because it caught me off guard. Because I was like, damn, that was real, real. But then I had to realize, I'm glad he said it. Because her misnomer was, because I'm a female, they're going to take care of me. They'll do this, they'll do that. But at the end of the day, there's an expectation at the end of the rainbow when that's done. And then guess what happens? Bitches and hoes and fuck yous. And then somebody wants to get aggressive. And that's not every guy. But then that's that mindset that I get all this and you ain't giving nothing. See, this is the things that those conversations that need to be had. So when he said it, I was like, my man, let me buy you dinner, because it came from somebody other than me. Because dad is a dickhead. Dad don't understand, but dad do understand. Dad plays a fraternity. Dad played ball. Dad knows all this because dad at that point was a young man who was out there hanging out, never buying a bunch of drinks, but I had no problem dating and being with people. And so as I grew up, I understood that. Then I wanted to make sure my babies weren't having a bunch of kids, because I'm not taking care of nobody else's kids. I'm not for that. I'm not going to let you be mistreated. So when I hear that clip, and I also think about his dad was a pro ball player, and his dad's infidelity and his behavior, because his mindset was going to be like my dad until the reality kicked in on his mama. See, that's the difference now. His mom was feeling a certain type of way, so now he's looking at his dad like he ain't shit when he was idolizing his dad at one point. We have a bunch of different variables that play a part in these scenarios. But the biggest thing is making sure, and I think we said it 1,000 times, you can't say it enough, and I appreciate your comment about that internet. Keep having communication. Because if we don't have communication, we're setting them up for failure. And so
I'm a real dad. I tell people all the time, I'm a real dad, I'm a real therapist. You ask me a question, I'm going to tell you that shit's stupid as fuck, but it may work if you do this. I'm a real dad. Hey, girl, if you do this, this is what's going to happen. Because at the end of the day, you have to protect yourself, and I think you said it best. If you don't protect yourself, ain't nobody else. You can't find happiness in somebody else until you find happiness in yourself. So I think we do a lot of that, especially when we talk about being developed early, having a body and getting all that attention and all that, but it was the wrong attention because they weren't looking at her age or how bright she is. They're looking at them big-ass titties.
Right.
I'm a fucker to death. So and that's where the misnomer is because, again, these are the predators. When we talk about those are predators. Those
right.
are actual predators. And then those are the people we need to deal with, and we fail to do it. Because I know back in the day when I was growing up, if you was an older guy, you preyed on one of the young girls' neighborhood, man, they beating the brakes off your ass because you know better. See, that's gone out the window. And I remember my cousin having sex with one of our homeboys. I was going to beat the brakes off, dude. She begged us not to beat him to death. But then she had several more kids. You know what I'm saying? But
right.
she's still a good girl because she takes care of her kids. That's one thing I can say. I'm not happy with the outcomes, but I'm happy with the responsibility that she's taking. And so, I mean, it's just a whole bunch of things that we have to talk about, that we have to keep these conversations going. I appreciate you guys for this because it's so underrated, especially in our culture.
No, absolutely. For the caller, 609, last 3891, I got to go to break. I'll come bring you out of the break. You're listening to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show, where all I ask is that you think. LNG Technology Services, we are your industry leader in aircraft and heavy equipment repair services. In commercial business for over 15 years, LNG technicians have over 150 years of equipment-specific knowledge and are known industry-wide for returning worn-out, broken, and overused ground support equipment back to the user in working better than new conditions. For a service job done right at a value unparalleled in the industry, contact LNG Technology Services at 478-781-4860. Again, for a service job done right, that number is 478-781-4860. LNG Technologies is a Mental Dialogue Gold member and proud sponsor of the Mental Dialogue community.
Hey, where did you get that hat and t-shirt? I like that.
Oh, I got this at moneymotivation.com. It's fresh, right?
Yes, and I love the message on it, too. You are the hustle, huh?
That's what the shirt says. I am the hustle. They embody the entrepreneurial spirit, and what I like the most, it's more than a brand. It's a lifestyle for those who want to put in the work and expect to have the finer things in life. I also follow them on Instagram. Check this post out.
If you believe money is the root of all evil, you're using it wrong?
Or how about this one? Excuses made $0 an hour.
I like those. What's their IG?
At moneymotivation.co.
But do they have any ladies' gear?
Yes, you're going to love the clothing line they got for the ladies. Matter of fact, pull up their website, moneymotivation.com, and I'm going to get you a few things so we can both look like money.
Everywhere I go, go, and everywhere I be, I don't even talk, they still know it's me. Cause I look like money, smell like money, talk like money, even walk like money.
If you have a product or service you would like to get out to the smartest audience in all of radio, please contact me again at 404-604-9477 or follow us on social media, IG mental_dialogue, and DM me to advertise with us and support us. If you're an individual, go to mentaldialogue.com and become a supporter or a member of the Mental Dialogue Talk Show and Community Club. Keep Intelligent Radio on the air. This morning's discussion question, first time having sex, memorable or do-over? Special guest co-host Ashley Thomas and special guest Dr. Anthony Grady. We actually got a caller. Area code 609, last 3891. Give us your name, where you're calling from, and your 3 cents on this morning's discussion question. 891, you're live on the air. Ashley, are you there? Just checking to make sure.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. 891, going once. You're live on the air. You raised your hand. Going twice. Going 3 times. All right. So we're still at 0 callers for the sex shows. It never fails. Yep. So it is what it is. But Dr. Grady, poignant points. I love your realness, brother, because
because here's the era that we're in. As much as we keep advocating on this show that these dialogues need to be had, it's like, to me, it's like without pointing out the nuances, we will fail to do so. And so, I, like you said, it was like you was initially shocked when your brother, how your brother responded. Because it's like, why is he talking to my daughter this way? And you realize, oh, you know what? This is actually going to work because you were just speaking, in a sense, how you see the situation as a man, right, as the father of your children. And so I remember I once put a post up on the IG, and I'm trying to remember exactly what I said, but I said something to the extent of, I will teach my daughter to never go drinking with the boys. And in today's environment, I'm getting attacked because I get attacked because people start going, hey, well, what about these boys? What about teach the boys not to? And so what I explained was, if I don't have children, but I'm looking to get married and copy you and have children. I said, for me to protect my daughter, I have to give my daughter the game, because here's the reality. The majority of boys are not predators. That's the reality, despite what we may say in today's times. However, for those boys who were not raised properly, who don't have an understanding, who do expect something for a drink, right? I got to give her the game for those boys who were not raised properly. And if she listens to my game, then I'm not going to have to do nothing that makes me spend the rest of my life in jail, as I'm pretty sure that's how you feel about your girls as well, Dr. Grady. But I'm highlighting this to highlight even what provision of these conversations looks like from us as men, even though some of our provision of our girls, if you will, is frowned upon, because it's like, well, what do you say to the boys? My sons, in a sense, can be preyed on, but not in that manner. I still give them game for how a sister may prey on them, right? But it's still very different, and sometimes we don't like to recognize those differences. I think that has to be a part of these conversations as well. Dr. Grady and Ashley, your thoughts. I'll start with you, Dr. Grady.
I agree with you. I mean, I think that we generalize a lot of things, and I don't mean to say that, too. That's why I always make sure, and I had to learn that, I don't want to generalize and make everybody seem like they're part of the problem. I think that a lot of times, you know, the ego and the image that comes with things perpetuates that behavior or that mentality. You know, and one thing is that I have to ensure that my daughters understand their role. And that's the only thing I'm accounting for, because they can't, nobody can do anything to them a lot of times without their consent or their ability to allow them to do it. And so as we talk about that, and not saying that all young men are predators, I think a lot of young men are predators to their, to the peer pressure of supposedly this is what should happen. And if we can get them to understand that you're only accountable to yourself, no matter what anybody else says around you, you have to be comfortable with that. I think that's something that we also miscommunicate, is that being uncomfortable in your own skin is now a big thing with young people. Like, we had confidence out the wall. Hell, I probably couldn't hoop, but I had to get on. I look like I can get it in real good, and you can tell me nothing different. But these kids today, shit, they won't even try, because the lack of confidence or the lack of self-behavioral awareness has gone out the window. And so, and I'm going to digress and come back. When you start adding things like COVID, now we have video games. Kids don't know how to communicate without being on the system. These things also play a part in that first experience, because you got a lot of kids who have not had sex or sexual encounters because of that lack of communication or that lack of being able to communicate with others because of their confidence. Now we have kids that are, you know, I got kids who, they got friends online, but ain't got no friends at school, and they go to school every day. And they talk about everything online, because guess what? We are able to hide. Because you can't judge me if you don't see me and know me. You know what I'm saying? And so right. The kids that are more out there, and that's the difference when you look at young people, is there's a difference between being 14 and being, and let me explain what that means. I got 14-year-olds that are really 23. But then I have a bunch of 14-year-olds that are really 13, 14. And so when they get with these groups, because they can't communicate, because they don't understand, because they haven't done it, And then when they say something and it's not really on target, they get ostracized. It makes them revert back to that, I'm not dealing with nobody. Or what's happening now, and people don't want to talk about it, is I'm dating and I get hurt. So now I look at our opposite sex as a form of comfort. Or I'm balancing between the two to find out where my comfort level is. These are conversations that are happening right now where we talk about praying. I have 7th, 8th graders in a school with high schoolers. If you're talking about praying, these boys and girls are praying on each other, whether it was same sex or heterosexual behavior.
Mm-hmm.
So the problems start younger. It's not just older. They're praying on each other, and they know this kid is 13 and you 17. And the conversation is, man, are you fucking out of your mind? And so these are the other things that we need to address in number two that go talk about.
God, thank you for those thoughts, Ashley. Yeah, please jump in again. I know I kind of just offered, you know, some aspect of, you know, the aspect of even the dialogue as it applies to women and men can be different as a father. I just kind of threw that out. Any thoughts from you? I know you and I have had some personal dialogue about it.
Yeah.
And I know you've highlighted how frustrating it is. And I'm just like,
yes.
as your male friend, I still got to tell you the truth, regardless of whether it's frustrating or not. Any thoughts from you, Queen, in reference to how it applies to this conversation?
Yeah. You know, I you've already expressed, like, I have frustration there, and it's because, like, there are so many things, like, how we want to ignore sex, and then we want to bring it in, and I'm just looking for equality, right? Like, if you're going to warn your girls about predatory men and all of these things, then, like, the same conversations need to be had with our boys about, if you're not serious or if you don't understand that this person might be taking it this way, then go ahead and, like, move on to the next person. You know, so, like, for me, it's about how are we covering our bases? And I feel like with the focus on just the girls, and I understand it, you know, I'm not knocking it. I understand the focus being on girls, but we also need to be having these conversations with our boys.
So let me jump in here. I'm cutting you off on purpose, but I was going to jump in. So what I'm saying is the majority of boys are not that issue. So I'm saying there are plenty of boys who do get that. But here's what equality doesn't play out. I'm just kind of breaking it down to you when it comes to the reality of somebody being harmed. So where it doesn't play out is it's not as simple as, yeah, having those conversations with the girls and having the conversation you have that you're talking about having with the boys. Because we say it as if there's not enough boys getting those conversations. What it is based on people's life circumstances, there are still going to be some boys who don't get those conversations. And even if we do what you say, Ashley, based on their life circumstances, they're not going to get those conversations. So I have the conversation I'm having with my daughter for those boys. I have the conversation with my sons for those girls who are not getting this message. So what I'm saying is, yes, the equality ain't just simply what we say to our girls and say to our boys, as the provision applies to those who don't have those life experiences. So does that make sense? It's not even as simple as we need to have these different conversations. There are some people that never get them, and some people who are just evil. So we prepare for the worst case scenario. So with my boys, the conversation is what you're saying in addition to the kind of young girls who may try to take advantage of them. Because people, both sides take advantage of each other. It's just done in a different way.
Agreed.
And so I'm just saying, just understand that the dialogue is focused on how and why you could be taken advantage of. We give that to our boys and our girls. It just has to be said differently. That's what I'm just trying to be very clear on, if that makes sense. We got a couple of minutes.
If that's the case, I agree with that wholeheartedly. I just think the most important thing is that we're having the conversation, and by having the conversations, we create the space for our kids to come to us, and not approaching it as a parent, but taking yourself back to your first time, to how you felt, so that you can create this space where they can come to you. Because if you genuinely have that relationship, if it's there, your kids will not have a problem coming to you, big or small, and letting you know what they hear. And if they're not, there's a bridge there that needs to be dealt with and reinforced, because your child does not feel that you're a safe space.
Now, I love it. Dr. Grady, how can people stay in contact with you? We got about a little minute and 15 seconds to close this thing out, so I want to make sure people can follow you on social media if you have that, or any way that they can contact you for your services. Let people know that now. But thank you for your time with us this morning. You've been wonderful. Oh, I'm sorry. I muted you. You had some background noise. I'm sorry. You're back live now. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, man. Well, I said, man, I appreciate you guys. More than you know, man. This is a great dialogue. Man, I look forward to doing more. That's first and foremost. And continue doing what y'all are doing because education is priceless. I think that people don't take advantage of it enough. So thank you for that. I can definitely give my phone number.
Okay. Anything you want to give out publicly, go ahead and share. If it's up to you, whatever you want to share with people.
Oh, yeah. My phone number, my number, my office number is 219-318-5572. I got a website, too. It's HHH as in Harry, M as in Marcus, 2 L's as in Larry, C as in Cat, at .gov. And so, man, please, by all means, if I can ever be an assistance or any conversations that we need to talk about, I'm on board. Man, just keep doing the great work y'all doing. I appreciate y'all. Money y'all know.
Thank you. Text me that website, and I'll make sure I share it with the replay. All I
yes,
ask
sir.
Is that you think. We'll see y'all next Saturday.